Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show. Bolero, the mighty rock instrumental, released as the B-side of his first ever single on 10th of March 1967 on Columbia in the UK and Epic in the US. It also features on his debut album Truth, which was released 2 years later. Well, we're still reeling here at Supertone with the death and sudden and tragic death of Jeff Beck. We've written an article on our blog, which you can find at vibes.starlight-campbell.com, about Jeff Beck and my personal relationship with his music and what he did for me. But, you know, this is one of these moments that you've got to really think about the history and the legacy of such an amazing guitar player, probably my favourite guitar player of all time overall, just because he was so troublesome. You know, it really was. Anyway, that single went to number 14 in the UK singles charts. But the question is, because we're not going to be too down about this, let's get a bit light-hearted. What was the A-side?
Hi-Ho Silver Lining.
No. Was it?
Yeah, it was the Silver Lining event, yeah.
Right, I thought that was later. Well, anyway.
No, because they needed to get him a single, so he was like pushed into the studio to record that. And Beck, Jeff always said it was like wearing a pink toilet seat around your neck for the rest of your life.
Yeah, well, we talked about that because we did a show a couple of years ago, didn't we, about Jeff Beck. And if you want to cross-reference that at some stage, if you're interested, you can do. They're all available on our website and on Spotify. But the recording session for this brought together a group of musicians, including Jimmy Page, Keith Moon, John Paul Jones, and Nicky Hopkins, piano player, of course, the first attempt at what was to become Led Zeppelin. And the funny thing about that track, of course, is who wrote it? Now, Susie doesn't know this. Come on, who wrote it? Come on, come on, come on, come on.
Oh, it was based on Bolero, but actually who wrote it was Jimmy Page.
It was!
And Jeff Beck.
Well, it just says the writing credit says Jimmy Page only, but...
We know better.
Well, but the thing is that Jimmy Page later on and Beck sort of kind of fell out because Beck never forgave him for Led Zeppelin, really. Anyway.
Well, I think it's always like ups and downs, isn't it? Especially when you're sort of passionate musicians, I think both of them were falling in and out of love with each other. But Jeff Beck said, so this Beck's Bolero thing was just conceived as a side project. It was decided it'd be a good idea for him to record some of his own stuff, partly to stop him moaning about the Yardbirds, which I thought was really cool. And it was recorded in May 66, a couple of months before I was born. At the IBC Studios in London. So this is the thing. So Mickey Most, right, he was under contract to Mickey Most, the producer.
Yeah.
So that's why Mickey Most gets a mandatory mention as being producer on the track. But he wasn't there, had nothing to do with it.
Is that right?
Yeah. So Simon Napier-Bell was there at the recording. And what happened was that he left and left Page at the console and Jeff was playing. And so basically... Page reckons that he was the producer of that track along with Beck. So, but Page was sat at the console and they finished off the track and produced it.
But they did say that he wrote it. Jeff Beck actually wrote the notes, the actual melody. This is where it all comes from. Yeah.
See, and what guitar was he using?
Well, I think then that sounds specifically like a Telecaster.
No, Gibson Les Paul.
No,
played
very
through
thin.
A Vox AC30.
Very thin. Well, I didn't know that, but lots of fuzz on it.
I could be wrong.
Just before we carry on, I've just got to say something about the track. Because when it comes into that rock bit, and the boom, boom, ba boom, 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 that bit,
yeah.
It is proto-heavy rock. I mean, you know, they say that heavy rock was invented by Led Zeppelin, but that particular bit of the track there is, it stinks, it reeks of British rock, you know what I mean? It really does. And, you know, so I think Page and Beck working together on that was interesting. And then, of course, Jimmy Page went on and did Led Zeppelin with only a few months later, really.
Yeah.
He'd obviously been writing songs and stuff already because, you know, some of the stuff the late Yardbirds were featuring some themes from what were to become Led Zeppelin tracks. Anyway.
Well, and it was Jeff's sister, Annetta, that introduced him to Jimmy Page.
No.
Yeah, yeah, because he went to Wimbledon College of Art. Anyway, she knew him, and that's how she got them together when they were teenagers and stuff. But you know what I love about Jeff, and what's so beautiful is, you know, they call him the guitarist.
Mm.
And I've got a little note here which just sort of does a little summary of Jeff Beck. He received the Grammy Award for Best Rock Instrumental Performance 6 times and once for Best Pop Instrumental Performance. In 2014, he received the British Academy's Ivor Novello Award for Outstanding Contribution to British Music. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice, in 92 as a member of the Yardbirds, and in 2009 inducted by Jimmy Page as a solo artist. So while his contemporaries became household names by continuing to mine and explore variations on the blues, Beck has always been a bit more elusive, following a wayward experimental path through heavy soul, hard rock, jazz fusion and electronica. And he's never been shy about speaking his mind through his music. And for more than 50 years, Jeff Beck has expanded rock's sonic vocabulary with an inventive style of playing that defies categorization. Thank you. Jeff Beck, Goodbye Pork Pie Hat, from his third solo album, Wired. And that was released in May 1976 on Epic Records. It's an instrumental album and it peaked at number 16 on the Billboard 200 charts and was certified platinum, selling over a million copies.
Ka-ching.
Yeah, it's a jazz classic written by Charles Mingus from his album Mingus Are Oom. And recorded at Air and the mighty Trident Studios in the UK and Cherokee Studios in Hollywood. Produced by
George Martin.
And mixed mixing engineer by
Jeff Emmerich. The man. Yeah. This track was the first real track that I got into from Jeff Beck. Yeah, because I listened to his earlier stuff, but as soon as he started doing the jazz rock, I really wasn't into that, you know. And but I bought the album because George Martin had produced it, and I thought, well, you know, I got it, and it's You know, we still have it on the shelf.
Yeah.
And vinyl. And I was just blown away with it. And what I love is this is obviously at Stratocaster, so you're not going to catch me out this time. But you can hear, because they've got single coil pickups, you can hear them buzzing as it's going close to the amp stuff. And you can hear him constantly changing his sound. He's messing with his tone controls, he's changing pickups. You know, and as he winds it up and pulls the volume up, you know, you can hear the fuzz coming in, and it's a very, very creative performance, I think, you know, of this classic. And what I do love is the bass part. I think it's absolutely fantastic, really sensitive, and also the slackness of it, because at the end, you know, the bass sort of comes in just slightly before the drums finish, and it's like, it's obviously done live. In you know, just some blokes hanging out and you know, playing some serious shit. And what I do love about it is the Max Middleton keyboard part, because the stereo effect is, it's very, very dramatic, you know. And obviously, when Jeff Emerick was mixing it, it's really left and right. If you listen to it, it makes you a bit seasick right at the beginning, but amazing, you know. You know, well, what can you say? It's just a masterpiece of guitar playing and playing. And I think the other thing is that there was nothing like this out there then.
No.
Nothing. You know, Mahavishnu Orchestra, John McLaughlin, it was a lot more jazz. It was a lot more stuff going on. There was a lot of jazz rock going on, or certainly jazz. But this was quite different, you know. He doesn't play a lot of notes. It's not fast. It's not, you know. It's almost a bit clunky in places. Like at the beginning, it almost sounds as though he's holding back a little bit in terms of timing, but it's just fantastic. Anyway, carry on.
Well, it's weird, you know, because when I did the media and performance degree at Salford, George Martin came along and he was there to sort of, he was one of the people who said, yeah, we've got a new degree course. And he came to put his royal seal of approval. It's a recording course. And there's a great story with him working with Jeff Beck. Anyway, I saw him and I didn't speak to him because I didn't know what to say to him. But when it comes to working with Jeff Beck, apparently one night he rocked up at his house, he was invited for dinner, with a massive bag of records and just said, right, play all these classical records, they're for you. You're really great on your melodies and just listen to all this lot and it'll serve you well. So he knew how to inspire him, you know. And that's what I love. I think that's that one thing. It's like, we know that he was invited to be a member of the Rolling Stones, but he's, as you say, you know, he's more like... he's got that more jazz thing. He was saying, though, you know, because he loves to experiment and he's troublesome, isn't he? He's troublesome. He likes to go off feast. He likes to break things and break the rules and just really experiment. So
he wouldn't work in the Stones, though. He's far too, he was far too different, because he caused a lot of trouble in the Yardbirds, you know. I mean, with his experimentation and stuff. Pink Floyd wants him to join. But I mean, in reality, Gilmour was a far better choice. But what always makes me laugh is that he was the template for Nigel Tufnell in Spinal Tap. And even now, every time I watch that scene where the amp goes up to 11, I piss myself, because it's obviously, you know, Jeff Beck, because Nigel Tufnell looks like Jeff Beck. You know, they took exactly that character, you know, and he's so serious. I'm absolutely incredible.
Do you know what's really lovely, though? They do say about Jeff that he had a great sense of humour and he liked to work with people who liked to have a laugh as well. I mean, he was obviously very serious about what he wanted to do, and he had to work with people. And I think he was quite humble, actually, as well. You know, sometimes he was saying that just always being really good to work with and trying to help people out, you know.
The great thing about Beck, though, is that, you know, as I talk about in this Vibes article that we've done, you know, there were four guitar players that were like really seminal to the British breakthrough into the United States of the British blues thing. You know, obviously there's Clapton, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, Peter Green. You know, and those were the cornerstones of what was happening at the time. But you know, Peter Green was pretty straight up blues. Eric Clapton was pretty straight up blues. Jimmy Page went completely rock, which is amazing. Still one of my favourite guitar players of all time. And then Jeff Beck did this.
I don't want you.
to make my bed.
Paul Rodgers, who else? Featuring Jeff Beck.
Who else?
I Just Want to Make Love to You, the Etta James track from Rodgers' second solo album, Muddy Water Blues, a tribute to Muddy Waters, released in 1993 on the Victory Music label. Now!
What?
What I've tried to do in this show is introduce everybody to the stuff he did outside his own work, because I think as a sideman, in a funny way, he was incredible. And that is a fantastic example. That solo, when it comes in, obviously overdub later on, but it is mighty. And it's a slide guitar solo. And he did always slide in sort of standard tuning. And it just is different. It's not like anybody else. It doesn't sound like anybody else. His choice of notes, his timing, you know, his sound, it's just totally different. But I'll tell you now, being a guitar player, you know, you try and play a solo as clean as that, because it's actually really, really clean, and just getting that articulation and the clarity, it is just brilliant. And of course the riff, you know, with that fuzz.
Gets you, doesn't it?
Yeah. And of course, on that track was the mighty, I've got to be careful here, Pino Palladino. And Jason Bonham on drums.
Yeah.
And I think it was all a bit slack as well. I think I know Jeff Beck wasn't on the beer, because I don't think he drank or took substances, but everybody else sounded a bit tanked up there. But Paul Rodgers, what a voice, you know. I mean, and it was a lovely band, you know, just for him to be in and to show off with. But anyway, there we are.
I think the story with that is that he was inspired again, just because after Free... he wanted to do something that, and he really loved Muddy Waters. So they say that he went into the studio with Jason Pino and his phone book of heavy hitters. So on the album, you've got Jeff Beck, Dave Gilmour, Slash, Gary Moore, Steve Miller, and Buddy Guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what an album. I mean, and that guy, he can sing. He's got some pipes, isn't he, as well?
Well, you know, he's probably the greatest rock singer that the UK has produced, really, from a technical point of view, because he's got soul in his voice. That's something. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great rock vocalists. David Coverdale, Robert Plant, of course, you know, Ian Gillan. All these people were fantastic, but... you know, this guy has something quite different. Mm. He's got that sort of black thing going on as well, you know?
Because I know that Jeff didn't really want to sing the lead on Hi Ho Silver Lining anyway. I know I keep bringing it up, sorry, Jeff, but it's like, but he wanted Rod Stewart, who was an unknown singer at the time, to sing lead on that. And I don't think he was really interested in that at all. And so after, we're now looking around like that 1967 era, and it kind of fascinates me. You know, it's so thick. It's so thick with all the different things that are happening at that time. So quick and so passionate. And everyone, it was that time when mates were hanging out, your musicians, your peers, the virtuosos were your friends. And so everybody knew each other and they played with each other and they challenged each other. So you've got the Jeff Beck group, which was formed in 67 with the unknown vocalist, Sir Rod Stewart.
Wad.
And Wadney. And rhythm guitarist, Ronnie Wood.
Ronnie Wood.
Now, I didn't know all this about Peter Grum.
Go on.
Peter Grum was a road manager at the time before he became the manager for Led Zeppelin. And he'd just been across stateside. And he found out, I mean, he was listening to this new concert and album-orientated rock FM radio format, which meant that you didn't necessarily have to have a hit single to break a band in the States.
Yeah.
And he thought that Jeff's band would be perfect to actually take to America, the Jeff Beck Group, and break America. And he was still under contract with Mickey Most at the time. You know what? I didn't know this, but Peter Grant tried to get him time and time again to break his to buy the contract off Mickey Most, and he wasn't having any of it. And so the Jeff Beck group nearly split up, but he persuaded them to go to America. So they ended up opening for the Grateful Dead in 1968 at the Fillmore East, the legendary Fillmore East. And the fans apparently were in a state of pandemonium. The likes had not been seen since the Beatles had been there. Can you imagine that, though? I can. I can definitely. And there was a career-making review from Robert Shelton of the New York Times. Quite beautiful, actually. And I can't do an American accent. Hence, I didn't go into acting because I'm not really good at accents. But it's beautiful. He says, the group's principal format is the interaction of Mr. Beck's wild and visionary guitar against the hoarse and insistent shouting of Rod Stewart.
It sounds like The Fall.
I know.
Living.
Yeah, it does, isn't it? Their dialogues were lean and laconic, the verbal ping-pong of a musical pinterplay. The climaxes were primal, bringing the big beat of the English rock school forward with whimsy and invention and modernist games thrown in. Brought tears to my eyes. That's just such a beautiful piece of music. Absolutely stunning. Jeff Beck, Where Were You? Taken from his sixth studio album. Jeff Beck's Guitar Shop with Terry Bozzio and Tony Hymas. Released in October in 1989 through Epic Records, and it reached number 49 on the US Billboard 200 charts. Weirdly, it didn't even chart in the UK. But it won a Grammy in 1990 for Best Rock Instrumental Performance.
I saw him on this tour. And the accompanying publication that goes with this podcast, vibes.star-campbell.com, you'll find it on there, talks all about it. And what it is, I'm not going to talk about it now. You can read it if you like. But to see him do it live,
wow!
You know, I freaked out. I freaked out because I didn't know what he was doing. Because he's using his tremolo to pull all those notes up. And, you know, I was far back in the audience and I couldn't really see. All I was hearing was this sound. And it sounded like a synthesizer. It sounded like a theremin. It sounded like something. But if you listen to the sensitivity, because he's now playing with his fingers and his thumb, which apparently before, he sadly died on the 10th, of course, but he was insured for, was it 11 million or something?
Oh,
seven million.
Because he cut the top of his finger off when he was making a stew.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So, I mean, but, it is incredibly difficult to do. And he's using basically a standard Fender tremolo. He's got a locking nut and stuff, but it's just outstandingly beautiful. And what I do love is Hymas's keyboards behind that, because that second inversion, bong, that one there, he's doing some stinky notes in there, and it creates a tremendous amount of tension against that beautiful melody. It was recorded at Jimmy Page's studio, Soul Studios in Leafy Cookham. That's not Leafy Cookham for our American friends. It's not a place. It's Leafy, as in leaves on the trees. Cookham, as in place, in Surrey.
Yeah, I know. Jeff was saying, you know, that it took them 8 months to write and record the album because Hymas brought a chessboard along.
Bloody keyboard player, you see.
And to top it all off, he said, and guess what? He said, I left my bike in the shed, so Jimmy Page got that an extra bonus as well. So
no.
He got his bike because he left it by accident. So apparently, though, you know, it's almost like there's like ethereal opera singers or fairies dancing around in that track. You know, like the sounds that he created. And they say it was because he was listening to some Bulgarian choral music and he was putting the whammy bar, was it high off the body, and he divined these notes like some invisible scale. And you can read it, but unless you hear it, I know what they're talking about, but it's so difficult to put it into words what you hear.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds easy, basically. You just pull a tremolo arm up, but you've got to get it bang in tune. And it's not like a guide, like you're playing a slide where you guide your finger against the fret to see where you are. You've got to listen.
But doesn't he feel like and sound like a free spirit? I mean, he's a magnificent, magnificent guitarist.
But what I also love is the fact he rushes. He'll go, ba-da, da-da-da-da. It's a bit like Willie Nelson, da-da-da. And he doesn't play the track, he takes it on like a rugby match. To me, that's what it seems to be to me anyway.
Thank you.
Jeff Beck, Because We've Ended As Lovers Live, from the album Performing This Week, live at Ronnie Scott's. I wish I could have been there. Recorded in November 2007, released a year later. Jason Ribello on keyboard, Vinny Colaiuta on drums, and if you know anything about drums, or if you don't know anything about drums, listen to that track. It is more than magnificent. He's my favourite drummer in the whole world anyway, but on that, God, it's unbelievable. And of course, Tal Vilkenfeld on bass. 21 years old when she did this. Of course, written by Stevie Wonder, the track. And when he heard the track, This Is Beck, he said, this is a guitar piece. And Max Middleton came up with a keyboard part for it on the actual album. But this is the live one. Ronnie Scott's, probably, in my opinion, his most accessible and finest bit of work that's captured because he's so close. You can see him. It's beautifully recorded and shot video-wise. And he was really on the top of his game. And again, you could hear him using that technique of the thumb, the fingers, the volume controls, the tone controls, messing around with the, you know, the pickup selectors. It's just delicious.
It's one of our favourite concerts, isn't it, on DVD. We love it.
Absolutely.
I mean, so I love the Imogen Heap version of Blanket that he does. And this is the other one. I mean, Tal makes you cry with joy. In fact, and Vinny, then he makes you cry with joy. And then Jason, and then you've got Jeff. They melt your heart.
Yeah.
And they take you places that you can't believe are possible, really. I mean, as you say, I really wish I'd known about the gig and that I'd been there with you by my side and we could have cried together with joy.
Yeah.
But it's funny, you know, I was watching an interview with Jeff earlier this afternoon just as this album was released and they just finished it. Well, it was before it was released, but it was after they'd finished that. So it was a 5-night, 6-set residency for his debut ever at Ronnie Scott's. And the story goes that he was sat in a cafe having a cup of tea opposite Ronnie Scott's, and Leo Green, the saxophonist, spotted him, and said, "All right, how you doing, Jeff? Do you fancy, why don't you do a couple of nights at Ronnie's?" And he said, yeah, whatever. Anyway, Leo was very persistent and just loved the idea. And finally, Jeff agreed to it. And Sally Green gave him the 5-night residency. So he was talking as well as about, you know, when they played B.B. King's in New York, and just saying the sound could be a problem with a low ceiling in a small venue. And anyway, he didn't want to be, was on stage. And so he thought, well, you know what, if we can't pull it off here, then we can't pull it off anywhere. Because it's the sound, it's the way they play. Because you're saying, if you're in a small room, playing louder doesn't work. So they really worked on this whole balance of the sound and the set. And he was asked, like, you know, did you know that, like, Jimmy Page is in the audience? And he said, no, did I, Eck?
Well, when you look at the actual equipment setup, it's no different than anything else. He's still using his Marshall JHM45s. And so it must have been pretty hairy in there, like, because he I don't think he plays quiet. But, you know, but it was just absolutely magnificent.
Well, you know, that's the first time he played a small venue since 1969.
No.
Yeah, when he was working with Jeff Beck Group and Rod Stewart. So for him, it was a complete and utter. It'd been years and years and years. But it's just fantastic. And he was asked if he'd do it again. He said, no, leave it. But yeah, he's got a great sense of humour.
You cannot replicate something as magnificent as that with that lineup as well, because it was the magic lineup.
And he said, you get out there, and he said, you just want to get into it, because you said you can't think about who's in the audience. You can't think of anything because it's off. You're not like doing jing, 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 jing on the chords. You know, it goes and it takes off. And he was saying about Bex Bolero, he wanted to put that in because he knew that, you know, maybe some people would know it, you know, and he was just really, really thoughtful about it. But all in all, thanks, Jeff. What a gig.
Thank you.
Jeff Beck. The Pump. You can almost see him ripping down the roads in one of his American hot rods there, can't you, in that song? From the album There and Back, released in June 1980 on Epic Records. It reached number 10 and 21 on the US Billboard Jazz Albums and Billboard 200 charts, produced by Ken Scott and Jeffrey Arnold, and recorded at Ramport Studios in London, and the only studio that he released between 1976 and 85.
I saw him on his tour in Birmingham. It was a marvellous weekend. I saw The Who on the Sunday, I saw him on Saturday night, and on Friday night I saw Paul Young with the Q-tips. There we are. Fantastic.
Wow.
I play the way I do because it allows me to come up with the sickest sounds possible. That's the point now, isn't it? I don't care about the rules. In fact, if I don't break the rules at least 10 times in every song, I'm not doing my job properly. Jeff Beck. Good lad. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, you know, and here he's using a pick, as you can hear. It's quite different than the other sounds. You know, it's more aggressive, but it's, you know, but the whole album's fantastic and well worth a listen. American Hot Rods. He loved his American Hot Rods.
Yeah, apparently he used to go, his uncle used to look after him on weekends and he had an MG.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he loved cars from that. And then his parents went to take him to see the coronation, apparently, but they got the date wrong. So, he said, so his parents, they bought him a Hot Rods magazine, and that was it. Because he looked at all this chrome and went, what, they're not dirty? What's going on here then?
And he made the cars himself, which of course completely juxtaposed for being a guitar player, with his hands insured for all that money.
I know, but the thing was,
building cars
when he was going out with his uncle, apparently, they used to break down a lot. So he was forever fixing this. And he does say that when he's in the garage and he's building cars, repairing them, looking after chassis and stuff, he said there's this beautiful space just somewhere towards the back, he said, and he just thinks, what a beautiful day. What a great place to be.
Well, this is the last track on the show, and we're finishing off with a track he guested on.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to try and introduce some stuff on here that wasn't his own material, and I thought he was a great sideman. Apparently, for this track, he rocked up to the studio, he put his Ampeg Reverber Rocket on top of the grand piano, plugged in, and played the solo, as you do. And the whole thing, it's Bottleneck, it's all those great things. And of course, it's done with his mate, Percy Plant.
Robert.
Yes. The Honey Drippers, Good Rocking at Midnight. So this show's been all about Jeff Beck, who passed away on the 10th of January, 2023.
And thank you, Jeff. And thanks for inspiring us and going for those glorious, happy moments.
Hey!
grab a brick, cry, hey.